Punk's not dead, and neither is New Wave. Join Buzz and Ben on Static Rage, the Punk and New Wave Album Review Podcast.
You know, it's still March, and we do a thing here in March, so we're going to continue to do that thing. I'm Ben, with me is Buzz. Yeah, it's still March.
It is still March. And if you don't know us by now, you fucking should. You know exactly what we're doing. And tonight we're going to do something a little bit different. Last time we did this, we went way off the spectrum and did the Dubliners. And if you haven't listened to that, you should go listen to it because Luke Kelly has an amazing voice. For this week, we're going to do something a little bit different. I convinced Ben that we should do a live album. And there's a reason for that. So, Ben, I'll let you talk a little bit, then I'll go into it.
Yeah, so what we are doing is, I'm going to attempt to pronounce this correctly, Iyer Og, Live at the Brazen Head, which was released in 1997. It was not on a label. That is actually the name of the label that it was on. And yeah, it is a live recording. And I don't know a whole lot about this artist, so hopefully Buzz can kind of fill this in. I know that it is Gary Og, I believe is the gentleman's name, and he is from Glasgow, so a Scottish Celtic descent. I'm seeing a lot about Irish Republican Golds.
So you were very close. There's nothing wrong with calling it Iyer, but the every time I've heard someone pronounce the name of this band, it's always been closer to Iyer. So okay. Iyer Og. If you talk to any native speakers, it doesn't really matter because there's like three different dialects when it comes to speaking Gaelic. Mm-hmm. So as long as you kind of get the idea down, it's kind of a forgivable thing. Case in point, everyone likes to call the toast slanja. It's more of a slanja, but no one's going to correct you. They all know what you're saying and you say it, it's fine. So yeah, Gary Og is the guy that sings for this band. I've known about this album, this band, since 1999. And the reason I know about this band is because one of my friends, who is parents from Ireland, had a copy of the CD. The story will go as thus. Apparently fucking everyone in Northern Ireland and right all along where real Ireland starts had a fucking copy of the CD. The reason I wanted to do this is it's very hard to find a copy of this. It's no longer in print. It has not been in print for a very long time. So when you look for these songs and this album, they've been uploaded to YouTube. And I think there's one other media device out there that does it. But either the songs aren't in order or they actually take away some of the songs because of the very politically charged lyrics to them. Just so happened we were talking about doing this, and Ben, I think I told you it'd been like 7 days prior that someone actually uploaded the entire album. So within 7 days of us talking about doing this, me going, man, how are we going to find the albums? No shit. Someone put on YouTube the entire album, like song by song. And it's not the entire CD. It's them compiling like what's taken from the CD and putting it on. So some of the songs are harder to hear than others because of the recordings. At the same token, it is a live album, so it's to be expected. For those that don't know, however, the Brazen Head is a very, very, very small pub, but is the oldest pub in Ireland. So if you ever see the interior of this place, you can just imagine how packed it was that night. And the reason I wanted to push for this is two reasons. One, finding anything from Iyer Og or Gary Og is very hard to get. That's not a live album, because that's what they do. They tend to do their things live more than just record it. And the other reason is, and I talked to Ben about this a little bit, bands like this, where it's a much more politically charged band, there's something about having a live audience really get into the music because it adds to the music. And we'll talk about that tonight as we go down the track listings. But there's something about the energy, and especially considering what most of these songs are about, does kind of play into that. And it's almost like it makes its own music as well. So that's kind of why I wanted to push for this. The other thing is, this is the first time that I'm actually going to give a warning label when talking about this, because a lot of the songs on here are very pro Irish Republican Army, specifically during the Provo era. They're very unapologetic when it comes to this. And so if you're someone that is perhaps like I don't like this. I have friends in the SAS. Don't remember. It's just music. Let it be that. It's just music. That said, it's cool that Gary Ogg actually sings for them because even though he's from Glasgow, he's people from the Lowland Scotland are very much related to people in Ireland. I know people get mad when I say that, but Scots and Irish are actually very, very, very closely related, especially when you go back several hundred thousands of years. There's a reason that Scot Gaelic and Irish Gaelic are a thing, and there's a reason that even though they're different, they sound extremely similar. So just keep that in mind when you listen to it.
Well, there's also a very strong, although not as violent in Scotland in the modern times, there's also a very strong desire amongst a large percentage of the population to be free of the United Kingdom. And I think you can definitely see this in the iconography Gary Ogg uses when I was searching for him and seeing like a lot of the live shows and stuff. He'll have like the Scottish flag and the Irish flag. So it makes a lot of sense. I mean, you do have to know a little bit. I have a couple of comments before we talk about the album itself, about some of the things you said. And I don't pretend to speak Gaelic. I happen to work with some colleagues who are Irish historians who can. I'm not one of them, but considering that my language basically had to be reconstructed, the way that it does not pronounce like it looks is not surprising. And then also your point about the live audience and the audio quality of this. I was actually somewhat surprised because I didn't really feel that it got into a raucous live setting until very close to the end of the album. And at least the stuff that I listened to, there was only one track I thought the audio was bad, but you could tell that the copy of the disc or whatever the person uploaded from was scratched because it actually had like clicks and stuff in it.
Yeah, so tonight I'm gonna, when I get to the grading, I'll actually grade this a little bit differently than I normally do. I'll go ahead and just play out my criteria now. One, because it's a live album. Two, because Ira Ogg is essentially Gary on vocals and guitar. They have a drummer, which I'll talk about here in a second, and they have someone on bass and they have someone on a synthesizer. And that might sound surprising considering what we normally do on this channel. Here's the thing. The way that these songs are presented, these are not new songs. Every one of these is a cover of something. Whenever you're doing any kind of folk music, any kind of especially Irish rebel music, someone has recorded it at some point, and there's artists putting their own spin on it. The reason this is important is because when this album came out, no one put a live snare drum or a drum kit of any kind on any of these songs. Thus, it makes them sound more militaristic, which is part of why I wanted to get this one done before we did any others.
Yes, and actually, I really liked that sound. And I would like to give credit to the players on these albums, but I have no idea who the people who were playing with Gary Ogg that night were. I will say that the bassist was very good. I found his fills and what he was playing along with this, because you have to think a lot of these are Irish traditional songs. Not all of them, of course, because some of them are much newer, coming from the time of the Troubles forward. With like the Wolf Tones or stuff like that, there could have been bass on them, but traditionally these songs would not have had bass. But I thought what the bass player played on them was very, very nice. And actually, while we're talking about this, the sound mixing of this was really good. Because a lot of times, the reason I don't like live albums is because usually they sound like shit, unless they're you do like Kiss did and like actually record in the studio and pump in a bunch of fucking, crowd noise or something. But this is not one of them. This actually sounds pretty good. You can hear all the instruments real well. To Buzz's point about them using a militaristic sound with the snare drum, totally get it. But you can hear everything really clear. It was actually really well mic'd and recorded.
So there's a documentary that's been uploaded to YouTube within the last year called A Rebel I Came, which is a allusion to a Bobby Sands song that he wrote when he was in prison, called Back Home in Derry. And they talk about the night this was recorded. One of the things they bring up is the fact that, again, no one had done drums on a live album before. So it's funny because there's other rebel bands out there now that do put drums in them, but that's because of this album. The other thing when it comes to being recorded is, and I didn't know this until I watched the documentary, apparently they had a ton of microphones in there. It wasn't just like one or two in front of like the singer and in front of maybe one of the other players. Apparently there was like a whole bunch of mics that were hooked up so they could get everything because they knew they were going to be recorded. So it's kind of cool knowing that they had more than one mic getting all this. And that's, of course, where I think the quality and sound comes from. Now, with that in mind, it's still a live album, so it's not perhaps the best audio recording out there. But for a live album, it's actually pretty well done.
Yeah. I'm actually, if they had that many mics, that doesn't surprise me other than the fact that it didn't really sound. And again, I don't know how this was mixed or mastered, but it didn't really sound like there was a lot of bleed over into the mics. So again, whoever did this is really, really good. Because you cannot, running them into, by that time in 97, running them into individual channels, if you knew you were going to record, that the mic sound wouldn't be that big a deal. The equipment was out there. Would have been expensive, but not like crazy.
Yeah, and part of me wonders, too, if what we listened to hadn't been remastered.
It's entirely possible. I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at this album on Discogs right now, and it doesn't say anything about there being another release other than a 97 one, but who knows?
People can do
that at home on their computers now, so he might have cleaned it up before he uploaded them.
Right, right. And that's the thing. I think we listened to the same exact recording, because I found it on YouTube, I sent it to Ben, and I was like, hey, yeah, this guy like uploaded all these songs. I think he took them from other people, and because each time a song list, like, it has like someone else's channel on it, so I think he just compiled the different ones and said here's what it would sound like, and that's why some of the qualities may be different on each track. That said, except for the one that you're talking about, I think I know which one it is. They really do kind of sound like the similar quality. So, I mean, there's at least that. But if anyone's listening to this right now that has this album, make a copy, please. Because I would fucking love to get my hands on one. So.
Yeah, I would too, honestly. What was I going to say? Yeah, I mean, the main thing I noticed in that, again, other than the one track that had, I suspect that the source was Scratch that they loaded it up from. The only thing that I really noticed is that there was a difference in the sound levels. And that could be, when they uploaded it, how high did they have their levels? And I don't know that that actually reflects the master recording or the actual product that much.
Indeed. And that's why when we grade this tonight, I'm not going to take that into consideration. I won't, because it's too hard of a thing to track down, and I feel like it would be unfair. Just because of how we had to listen to it. So, if we ever get a chance to get on our hands on the real recording or a recording of the recording, maybe we can come back and visit and talk about it then. But yeah, I'm actually not going to bring that into production value tonight.
Yeah. So this is, I expected it, like I said, and this might be on me going into it, I expected it to be a slightly more raucous than it was, although it does get, especially in one song, which we'll talk about when we get to tracks, it was more reserved, almost very respectful at the beginning. It did, and I don't know, like, if this is how it was played live or if this was just how it was sequenced on the album. But you did feel a ratcheting of intensity as it went through. But then again, the intensity of the songs, and this is going to sound funny considering that Sunday Bloody Sunday is the second track, but they get more intense as it goes along.
And that's kind of where, And Ben and I had this conversation where I talked about it. I had said that, when you hear the crowd, it is towards the end of the album. A couple of things play into that. One, this is at a bar. They're playing this at a bar. People are drinking. Sometimes it takes a few minutes for people to get going. But by the time it gets down towards the end, it's been a good, what, 10, 13,
It's
20,
almost, yeah, it's,
half an hour, give or take a little bit. I mean, I'm guesstimating. Maybe a
I'd
little
say
over half an
closer to
hour.
40 minutes by the time that I'm talking about, 30 to 40 minutes.
So towards the end, it's been a good, I'm going to say like 40, yeah, let's say 45 minutes. Depending on how much you've been drinking, that could change things a little bit. Also, I don't know what time of night this is recorded. There could very well have been a possibility that people just walked in hearing some of the songs going, "Hey, this band's playing tonight, let's go in." And by the time those ruckus people get there, it's like you're on the seventh or eighth track down. That's something to think about too. And this is actually why I kind of want another reason I wanted to do this. The crowd's playing into this. The crowd is kind of helping out sometimes with the music. And it does kind of help a little bit. Some people might think it takes it away. I think it actually just helps with moving things along. And pretty much any Rebel band is going to be like that. Like you can hear their recorded stuff and it's kind of okay. Then you hear them live and it's like, oh wow, this is more of a kind of like a rock band. Which brings me to another point I wanted to make before we get into the listings tonight. I would argue you could almost being the keyword, call this a punk album.
I think,
Almost.
yeah, I was going to mention something about that too. The interaction with the crowd and the way the crowd reacts to this is very punk-like. Now, this is acoustic guitars, it's an electric bass, keyboards, like you said, and the drums. So it doesn't sonically match what you imagine punk, but some of the lyrical content, again, part of punk is violent, angry, and political. And, well, a lot of this is also violent, angry, and political. So yeah, I think that it's almost an unplugged session for a punk band.
And this was my first foray into Irish rebel music. I of course I'd heard the Dubliners growing up. I'd heard other bands growing up as well. This is the first time when I was a kid that I heard this and it was like, oh, this is not my grandparents' like angry music. This is something new. Let's talk about the name for a second. Let's backtrack just for a second. The band's called Arog. Ben, are you familiar with what that means?
No, I mean, I think I can guess because I probably Ireland, but I don't know what the aug is.
It means Young Ireland.
Okay.
So it kind of makes sense considering in the 90s, Gary was probably in his 20s. Half the people in that bar are probably his age, maybe a little older, maybe a little younger. That feeds into this too. You have a bunch of young, angry people that grew up either during the Troubles or hearing about the Troubles that are angry about something that they may or may not have experienced, but they knew family and friends that experienced it and that grew in that grew air of the world. That's going to cause a lot of discord. And that's kind of why I think it plays into this so well, because it's kind of tapping into that anger that certain people might have. Which again goes back to why you said this is almost you could almost call it a punk album. And I would take that step and call it that, but I wouldn't call it a punk band.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's a punk band, but I mean, it definitely has that vibe. I mean, and this is only, and I don't know when in 90, I don't know if it was recorded in 97 and released that year, or if it was recorded earlier. But anyway, we're still like a few years, or at least 8 year out from the Good Friday Accords. So, I mean, this is still when the Troubles were, I won't say full swing, but were still very much impacting people's lives.
Exactly. I was gonna say too, growing up as a kid, like I remembered there were still bombings going on that we heard about. Like there was, I think this is around the time, might have been earlier, but this might have been around the time that they had that letter bomb go off in London
I mean, you'd
that
have
blew
to
up in
be
the
much more
mailbox.
specific than that.
The one that blew up in the mailbox, it like ended up hurting like some kid, and that's when Jerry Adams was like, okay, we have to stop this because we're actually hurting us at people now. I think this was around that time. It might have been before or after. But that did kind of, I think, fuel us a little bit.
Another thing that I found interesting about this, and I am not anywhere near as well versed in Irish rebel music, I suppose, is, but I have heard a lot of it. This is one of the first albums that I've listened to that almost exclusively talks about stuff that is happening around Free Dairy. And I found that to be really interesting. They're not talking about 1920 or 1916 hardly at all. It is all stuff that has happened within at the time, the last 30, 40 years.
This is, and again, it plays into the name of the band, Iarog, or Aerog, however you want to pronounce it. That kind of is pretty much what this album is about. It's about like them dealing with this and what their experiences are and what their feelings are. And another thing is, most of these songs, Sunday Bloody Sunday was not, but I believe the majority of these were written between 1982 to 1988, because most of them were written about the hunger strikes, and the hunger strikes happened between 81 to 85. And the thing that comes up is at least two times in these songs, Bobby Sands is mentioned, and Bobby Sands was instrumental in the hunger strikes. In fact, three of these titles are about people that died in the hundred. No, well, two of them deal with someone that died during the hunger strikes. One is well before them. We'll get to that when it gets there. But the fact that that comes up in a lot, I mean, that says something. That resonates with a lot of people.
Well, I mean, that entire, and we don't, as Americans, think about it here because we had our own stuff going on during our civil rights movement. But there was a civil rights movement going on in Northern Ireland at the same time, because Catholic Irish people were being severely repressed in Northern Ireland at the time, because the security forces were all, Protestant and unionists. So it was a bad time.
Yeah, and this is probably a good time to just quickly go over when people bring up during the Troubles that at least people here that don't understand it as much, they only hear, oh, well, it was a religious thing because it was Catholics fighting Protestants, and it's like it's more than that. It's more it's
Yeah.
much
Oh,
more
yeah. Much
pol
more than that.
it's much more political. It has a lot more to do with politics than it does religion, and a lot of people don't understand that. But at the same time, I mean, religion does kind of play into it as well.
Well, it's identity. I mean,
It
it's
is. It's
yeah.
I mean, it's sectarianism. I mean, at the end
Right.
of the day,
Exactly.
it's very similar to what happened in some of the African states as well. A lot of sectarian violence. So, I mean, we could spend a whole like two or three podcasts talking about this. But that's what's essentially going on, is there's a lot of just a lot of pent up aggression. These people are finally getting out. But yeah, that whole part of Northern Ireland, Belfast, Derry, Crossmaglen, Armagh, that's where the majority of your combat, for lack of a better word, happened.
I
So,
think that's an appropriate term considering what all happened. I
yeah,
mean, it was a high level insurgency.
right. I was searching for another word, and I'm like, I think combat might just be the best word for this.
Definitely so. But yeah, again, this is, there's not, these songs are well played, but they're not super intricate or anything. I think that if you wanted to learn them and you had any, if you knew the chords, if you know your chords, you could play them. And that's kind of the point. because they're meant to rally. I mean, you know, so it's not meant to, this is not a bunch of people putting on their best outfits and going and listening to a virtuoso play. That's not what this is for.
Yeah,
this is to express sorrow, to express anger, to raise money, you know, camaraderie, companionship. It's all that, all the stuff that punk is supposed to do.
But so you're going exactly where I was getting ready to go with this. This is if there's any question of why we both consider it a punk album, it's right there. It's same with folk music. Not all folk music is the most intricate, and it's meant to be able to play it easy. So if I can teach you the song in like an hour, and then you can grab a guitar or a fiddle and you can go teach someone the song too, and next thing you know, six of us know it. So, you know, anyone can play it, and it's just who has the better voice. Cool, you're gonna be the lead singer for today. And that's kind of how this works. But that's kind of what I wanted to get at with this album before we jumped into the individual song titles. Is, again, like with the production, I'm not going to go into how well it was played or the abilities or lack thereof of the musicians. Everyone knows their job. They do an okay job. I'm not going to say it's great, but for what this is, it's ideal. And we'll leave it at that.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I didn't know if there's anything else you wanted to add.
No, I was actually going to say, I don't think there's anything more we can say about the album itself other than going into the song titles.
Well, then let's just go ahead and jump on in. I know this album pretty well. Ben, do you want to go first or do you want me to?
I will let you give the rundown of, because I like how you do on a lot of these albums, and don't go into the songs and what they're really about. I'm just going to, and I'll let you do that. Before you do that, I want to talk about the songs that I thought were that stood out to me. One thing that stands out about this album, not to use that term twice so close together, is that there are medleys on this. And I thought the medleys were very well done. It opens with a medley, and then like about halfway down we into the track listing, there are 11 tracks. So the first track and the fifth track are both medleys. And one of the things that I love about specifically the second medley is that it also includes like standard, not just Irish songs, but like it has "This Land is Your Land" included in the medley. And I really liked that touch. Again, not surprising considering what this is. As I'm sure a lot of people know, America was a very large fundraiser for the IRA, so it is unsurprising that there would be some connection to songs that Americans would know, even if they were not like involved in the rebel music scene. Actually, there's a second couple other medleys on here too where they combine stuff, but those are the big three track medleys. Where I think this album really picks up is really after that. So "Bring Them Home," "Voice of the Old Brigade," "Come Limbo Jail," "Joe McDonald," "Forward." And the highlight to me is the next to last track, the Sam song.
Yep.
That song is phenomenal anyway, even if like you might find it politically disturbing. I personally didn't, but you know, whatever. I also recognize it's more than a song, but I was just appreciating it for the song. but like that is when the crowd really, really gets into it, and I just wanted to fucking grab a pint and sing along. And then the closing track, some people will probably appreciate more, but since I am not a Gaelic speaker and I don't really understand it, that was somewhat lost on me, but it is cool. But man, Samsung, dude, that was hell yeah.
I'm going to talk about the Samsung when I get to the bottom, because I actually have quite a bit to say about that.
Yeah.
So first off, again, none of these songs are written by them. They're covers, essentially. I don't know when the Mary Plowboys was written, but it was probably during some time during the 80s. The Mary Plowboy is an awesome song. It's essentially about a dude that gets tired of being a farmer, and he decides to give up everything, go get a rifle, and it's just the imagery is awesome. I mean, you know, I'm off to Dublin this springtime, where the helmets shine in the sun, where bayonets slash and rifles crack to the sound of the Thompson gun. How fucking cool is that? It's almost like it's, and I know people are ready to say this is essentially a propaganda piece for the IRA, but it's a fucking awesome song. And then it goes into A Wiedersehen to Crosmic Glen, which is essentially about a young British officer thinking he's going to have a cakewalk because he's going to Northern Ireland. There's nothing wrong there. And going through just like this entire list of things that he thought he was going to be able to do. And, oh, no, can't do that. We're getting shot at. Oh, no, can't do that. We're getting blown up. Oh, God. It just the entire the fact that it goes over seamlessly into this so well, it worked. Because the first time I heard it when I was a kid, I didn't know that this was a medley. I thought it was the same song. So for the longest time, I kept thinking, oh, it's the same song. And I had to look it up when I got older. And it's like, oh, no, it's not. These are two completely different songs. All right. And then it goes into Chuck Yarla, which is, for those that are wondering how I just pronounce that, it's Gaelic. When you look at it, it doesn't look like what it's spelled like is now it's pronounced. It looks like if you're looking at it phonetically, like it would say Tiak Fade Arla, it's Chuck Yarla is the best way I can think to pronounce it to people that don't speak it. But that's a good one too. And then it stops, they take a quick break, and they go into Sunday Bloody Sunday. Everyone on this that's listening to this podcast that's listened to us before knows I fucking hate the Beatles. That extends to John Lennon. This is the one time I'm okay with John Lennon because I actually do like the lyrics and he's the one that wrote that song. They did change some of the words around, not much, but they did change some of them. And John Lennon's version is garbage because Yoko Ono's on it. So if you want to just, if you want to hear it and know where it came from just once, you can, but she completely ruins the song. This Aerog made it sound like their song rather than someone else's song. And that's what I liked about it. To this day, that is one of the songs that Gary Ogg will play when he does live shows. So that's a good one right there. Going down then to Pierce Jordan. He was a provisional IRA member or volunteer who was killed by the RUC in 1992. And there's a lot of question to how he got killed and why he got killed. And essentially this song is about what he went through, what his family went through. There's a lot of back and forth that people question about, but the song is very much of takes position that he was wrong completely. And I won't go into a lot more than that because it is people listening to this might disagree with me. They might say, oh no, the fucking RUC had every right to do it. I'm not going to argue that one way or the other. I wasn't there. But that is what the song is about.
Just to break in here for a second. The RUC is the Royal Ulster Constabulary. It's the Northern Ireland Police Force, in case people don't know.
And for this is who you hear a lot of pro IRA songs talking about the RUC. The RUC is your Protestant-backed police force. This is where a lot of anger and annoyance came from during the Troubles as well. In fact, I don't think they're around anymore. I think they...
Yeah, they were replaced in 2001.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they got replaced. But what's cool about this version is they actually use Gaelic Slangafuil Macara, which means farewell for now, my friend. And it's awesome that the Irish Brigade, who wrote the song, included that. It adds a little bit of the identity to the song as well. It does slow down a little bit on this because it is a ballad, as does the next one, which is Tom Williams. And Tom Williams was also a volunteer. He died in 1942, which when he got killed, again, it was very questionable. It didn't. He was put into a... I think it was straitjackets what they put him in, but he was in the Crumlin Road Jail. He was hung and he was put into an unmarked grave. And the way it was done, it was very cruel the way it was done. And that's why a lot of people started talking about it. And eventually a ballad was written about him. And I won't go into a lot of detail about it, but guess what? a lot of back and forth with the RUC on this too, so you'll notice this a lot as the songs go along. But again, it's a very good song, very slows it down. Then we come back to Let the People Sing, which the Wolftones actually wrote, I believe. I think they're the ones who wrote this. Let the People Sing is used by the Celtic Football Club, and they will not sing the second verse because the second verse is let's see. It's back in ancient times, the bard would tell the stories of the heroes of the villain, the chieftains of the glen, through Elizabethan time and Cromwellian war and fury, put our pipers to the sword, kill our harpers and our bards. They won't sing that at football matches for obvious reasons, but that is part of the original song. And of course they kept it here as well. So there's a lot of patriotism at that point. From there it goes into Take It Down from the Mast. Take It Down from the Mast is essentially a clapback to people that pretend to be pro-IRA but they're not, or they pretend to be pro-Ireland but they're not. It's essentially telling people to don't basically don't be a fool, don't be a poser, don't pretend to be something you're not. Very, very much a punk thing. And then of course it goes into This Land Is Your Land, and this is another song that gets played a lot by Gary Ogden when he does live shows. Of course he does change the words around a little bit, but it becomes a very patriotic song at that point. So it's actually been recorded by a bunch of different Irish artists as well. Bring Them Home is about the 10 men that died in hunger strike. I won't go into that. That's the one that I, if there's a weak point on this album, it would be that song, but I don't think that song is weak. It's just, I think it's kind of weirdly placed, but at the same time, that's what how they wanted to do it when they did. When you get down to The Boys of the Old Brigade, that is a song I want to say it was written sometime during the 20s. That is probably the only song on here that was what you would call like an old school rebel song, which is something you might hear perhaps even before the Wolftones were a thing. But that is essentially about the 1918, or sorry, the 1916 uprising and the things that followed through it. Of course, then Criminal Row in Jail is about the being placed in this jail cell, and it's a very infamous prison, and it's kind of what the H Block is, to where they kind of kept political people there. But it was it, it it's a very good way to end that one out, and it's actually not a very long song, so it's kind of cool to end it that way. Now, at this point of the album, more and more people are starting to get loud. And before we get down to towards the end and talk about how this album ends, I'm going to talk about Joe McDonald for a second. Joe McDonald is a very politically abiding song because the chorus is, "You dare to call me a terrorist while you look down your gun. When I think of all the deeds that you've done, you plunder many nations, divided many lands, you had terrorized our people, you rule with an iron hand. And you brought this reign of terror to my land." That is a very biting assessment of how someone might feel dealing with the UK at the time.
Oh,
The
yeah.
reason I want to bring this up specifically is when you get down towards about the middle of the song. Or actually, just towards the front, I should say. If there's a part where Gary goes, "And though I love my country, I'm not a bitter man." Right when he says that, someone calls back, "Oh yes, I am!" Like really loud, like into the fucking mic. And that is the point on this album where people start to get very, very ruckus. And at that, from this point on, the rest of the album, they start getting a lot louder and giving a lot of callbacks. But Joe McDonald's a good song on its own. When you get down to Sean South, the role of honor, Sean South again was a volunteer. I won't go into it, but he very questionable how he got killed. It was not a clean kill, so to speak. He was not killed in the middle of combat. So it's kind of a recurring theme in a lot of Irish rebel music. If you're not killed in like actual legit combat, there's probably a song written about you, and someone has like taken lengths to go, "This is what happened. from their perspective, and it gets more play than what actually happened sometimes. But The Roll of Honor was written by a group called the Irish Brigade, and The Roll of Honor is, again, about the 10 volunteers that died on hunger strike. And going back just one song is kind of touch on this. I believe Joe McDonald was the 10th person to die. I think he was the last one to actually die from the hunger strike, if I recall correctly. I could be wrong on that, but I believe he was the last one that died. And finally, it goes into Going Home, British Soldiers. And again, this is an older song, but when they go into this one, holy shit, the crowd fucking goes crazy.
Yeah.
And that is the point where I'm like, oh, this, they just, either all these people are drunk or it's just now hitting them, or they're like, oh no, we like this song. And when before he even starts off, Gary's like, here's a song to tell Her Majesty's soldiers what we actually think about them. And people start chanting the IRA in the background. And from that point, once that song ends, it goes into Sam's song. Now, I said I was going to talk about it, so we're going to talk about it. Normally, when the Sam song is played, there's a tin whistle involved, and the tin whistle player makes sounds on the whistle to make it sound like there's missiles flying through the air. Because they didn't have a tin whistle player, they had a synthesizer player. I actually think it works out better, because you can definitely tell, like, there's, you can kind of get that mental image of something flying around by the synthesizer. And during the song, when they're doing their musical portion, the crowd just starts chanting the IRA over and over. And then it's funny because Gary Ogg picks up on it and starts yelling it into the mic too.
Yeah.
And this is probably the best song on this album, not because it's the best song period, but just because, holy shit, this is the part where it's like, man, if the whole album was like this, dear God, they probably would have destroyed this place. But the Sam song is about surface-to-air missiles that the IRA actually purchased from Libya. And the joke to this is, by the time they purchased these Sam missiles, it was already old technology, so the British were actually able to shoot most of them down. I do think there was one instance of one missile that actually hit one of the helicopters, but it didn't really do anything. And of course, the joke to that is there was at least more than one helicopter that went down at some point during the combat that happened in Northern Ireland, but it was done by machine gun fire, of all things. So it's just kind of ironic how that happened, that the song was written before those things were actually deployed. But the song is to the tune of Ghost Riders in the Sky, which I'm not gonna lie, the first time I heard the song, I didn't listen to country, so I didn't know this was actually to that tune. So the first time I heard that song, I was like, what the hell, did someone rip off a fucking pro IRA song? And then, like, I had to go back, I'm like, oh no, this song was written in the 50s and this song was written in the 80s. Okay, all right. But still, it lends itself very well to it. The lyrics themselves are already biting, but the fact is that Gary Ogg does it with a lot of intensity, so you almost get the feeling like he's actually feeling this. Like, he's not just going through the motions, he's actually feeling and believing everything he's saying. And that is when you know that a performer is doing what they're supposed to. But yeah, that is probably the best song on here. Finally, Anthem. It's only about a minute and a half long. It's the first verse of the Irish National Anthem, which is a soldier song, but it's, let's see, Abraham Nafin. I think that's what it is. My Gaelic's going to be really rusty on this, but it's a soldier song in Gaelic, and he does the entire first verse all in Gaelic. It's a beautiful way to end the album. It just makes it very patriotic towards the end. So that is essentially the album. And without going into a lot of detail, because we spent a lot of time talking about it already, you can find these songs individually on YouTube. You can find them on your own and just, like, make your own decisions on them. But as for me, I fucking love it. I mean, this is what got me into rebel music in the first place.
Yeah, it's very interesting, because we now, close to 30 years removed from this, don't really think of how intense the times were in Ireland at the time. And this really catches that. And I have not had the pleasure of going to the country yet. I do intend to go. But this,
we should make a trip.
We should. Yeah, I would love to. We could go to the IRA museum.
We could.
So anyway, this is it, this a lot of the music we listen to is older, so it does serve as a time capsule period at the end. And like this, it is often talking about economic troubles or strife, but this is music from a place where, like I said, maybe not it was starting to wind down, but it had been very hot for a very long time with shootings and bombings and disappearances and all kinds of stuff that were going on. So that gives this an intensity and a relevance that is different, not going to say better or worse than singing about, the economic strife that like the Sex Pistols were singing about, or even Black Flag, just the stuff that they were singing about when they were facing getting beaten up by American police. It's not exactly the same thing. Not saying it's any less dangerous, but it's not, the military being called in.
Yeah, and that's something to kind of consider too, is even though the troubles have ended some time ago, there's still remnants of the IRA over there. Because after the Provos, I think they had the Continuity IRA, then it was like the real IRA. There's a group over there now that has nothing to do with those groups, but they still call themselves the Something IRA. And my understanding is they're little more than a gang right now. I could be wrong on that, but that's my understanding on it. No, this has been going on for a long time. Even before the provisionals took over. I mean, this is even before the 1916 Easter Rising. I mean, if you want to talk about Theobald Wolfone and like what he did in like the 1700s, I mean, there's a lot to go over if you really want to. But that's really where we're at with this, is this has been going on for more than just, 50 years. This has been going on for a very long time. And a lot of, like, you hit the nail on the head. It's not that every country has their own troubles. Every country has something they have to deal with. This is something these people have been dealing with for an extremely long time, and it hadn't gotten any better up until this point that this album was released.
I mean, and there are, I suppose, just said there are, you can find examples of similar things. Like, if you listen to some of the blues music that was coming out of the Mississippi Delta in the 1930s, I mean, we're talking about like racial terrorism that of a high order with all the lynchings that were going on. So that is not exactly the same thing, but it is similar enough. So you will see this stuff. But like, again, this is a country that is technically two countries on one island, that is an incredibly complex political situation, and music is being used that some people, and nobody would have been in that bar that night. I guarantee you that, or probably ever at the time, who would have vehemently opposed what was being sung about. And that just to me makes it even more fascinating.
So to this day, there are certain songs that you cannot sing in the UK, otherwise you get arrested. And half the songs on here are ones that'll get you arrested. The excuse they'll use that you're inciting a riot, or that you're attempting to perpetrate terrorist acts. I think that's one of the things they use. I'm going to go off on a tangent. I'm not trying to wave my own flag here, but this is why I'm kind of glad we're in the US, where I can say things like that. We don't have to go to worry about going to prison for expressing an opinion or belief, no matter how fucked up it is. And I think that's just a testament to, if you have a group that says we can throw you in jail because we don't like what you're saying, I think that's fucked up.
And to your point about the there are still people claiming the IRA name, whether they can actually claim the legacy or not. There was a bombing not 2 or 3 years ago that killed a reporter. And I remember there being a lot of backlash about that and fear that it was going back to the bad old times. So, and I don't think anything has developed from it since. I will admit that since the pandemic, I haven't really been paying that close of attention to the situation in Ireland as I have at other times in my life. Because for those of you who don't know, I studied political violence, and you can't really study modern political violence from a global perspective without looking at what was going on in Ireland, if for no other reason than it was so interconnected with, depending on which side of the coin you are on, freedom movements or terrorist movements throughout North Africa and the Middle East and other places. There was several, I've already mentioned that there was, that the U.S. was very heavily involved in fundraising to buy arms for the IRA. Well, Canada was very heavily involved in buying arms to fund, you know, for groups in Northern Ireland. So it was, as I said, as Buzz said, we could spend several hours on a different kind of podcast talking about this. And that's not really what you're here for, but I do think it is important to kind of know that context to these songs and to what this recording captures.
Exactly. I mean, that's why I didn't want to spend too much time talking about the specifics of these songs other than just like, hey, you should look them up because this is essentially what it's about. Just real quick, as we were talking about at the beginning of the podcast, we were talking about the American sympathizers. One of the biggest arms dealers was the Harrison Network, and is by a dude named George Harrison that ran guns to the IRA and the Provisional IRA from roughly the 1950s to 1981. You'll hear a lot of pro-IRA songs talking about Armalite rifles. Mm-hmm. It's because he smuggled a lot of AR-15s and AR-18s over there because that's what he was able to get a hold of. So kind of like how one of the Middle Eastern flags has a pair of AKs on it. It's same kind of thing. All in Ireland, they had Armalites everywhere. So they picked those up, and that's why you hear a lot of it talking about it.
Well, and I think we've talked about this too, because like, they could have gotten AKs because AKs are plentiful. They're reliable. I mean, I love an AK. But
oh, yeah. Yeah.
But one of the reasons that they used Armalites is because of the connotation of AKs with Middle Eastern terrorists and and also Russia, the USSR. So it was a distinct choice to use Armalites because of the fact that the U.S. and West use similar pattern weapons.
And they did get some AKs. They did get some Eastern Bloc weapons, but a lot of those were purchased from Muammar Gaddafi.
Yeah.
They didn't get a lot. It was actually more artillery. That's like the biggest thing that they got. That's why, like when I mentioned the Samsung, that's why it was such a big deal when they bought those surface-to-air missiles, because Gaddafi sold it to them.
Yeah.
And it was like, hey, I've got these old missiles that don't really... I can't really use anymore. Here you go.
Well, I mean, you know, that they, Gaddafi, we're about to go down a rabbit hole, so I'll try to keep it brief. But Gaddafi considered himself an anti-communist, and he viewed the Great Britain and a lot of other Western nations as colonial powers. So he either sold or gave weapons to a lot of movements across the world. As a matter of fact, the only person to this day, but the first person who was tried and convicted of terrorism was in Chicago. His name is Charles Fort, of the Black Peacetone Raiders, Rangers, or El Rukan, who the FBI said he had made contact with Libya and was attempting to buy a surface-to-air missile to shoot down a commercial airliner. Now, whether or not that was actually what he was going to do or not, or if it's one of those FBI sting things, who knows? That was in like 1986. Again, this just shows this interconnectedness of I don't necessarily want to say these struggles, but like the role Gaddafi was playing, which I think is something that is completely forgotten today, and like arming these movements and why he was considered America's number one bad guy.
Yeah. I, another thing we didn't mention was there was a ceasefire that happened in the '90s too. And that's something that was going on. I don't want to get into the rabbit hole too much because we could, I could do a whole ass podcast about it, which we might have to do that one day, man. We might actually have to like do like a more serious podcast and just talk about it.
Yeah, I'm down. I'm down.
Yeah. So, and that's really what it was, man. This is something that I wanted to do this one for a while. It's meant a lot to me growing up. And for those of you who think that, that might be offended by this, I'd like to point out there's actually a few, not as many, but there are a few anti-IRA songs, by some Scottish performers, funny enough. So maybe one day we'll get into that. They aren't, I don't think they're as well written. I don't think they're as angry and as aggressive, but they, it is, it does give you like a different perspective if you want to take that as well.
Well, and to the point, and this is my, I swear, everyone listening who stuck with us, thank you. But this is my final point. As I said about Sunday, Bloody Sunday, that event was so powerful that even people who would not normally have written songs about what was going on in Northern Ireland did, such as John Lennon, such as Paul McCartney. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, probably the most famous one is U2, but like every there was a lot of people writing songs about what happened because that was just so shocking to the mass consciousness.
Yeah, we might have to do a discussion on that one day. But with that said, that is essentially the album, and I'm going to echo what Ben said. Thank you for sticking with us if you're still listening to us. We went a little bit longer than normal tonight, but I think it was needed.
I do too.
I'm going to go ahead and go first on this. I'm just going to give this thing one grade. And the only reason I'm going to do one is because I can't talk about the production value. I can't bring all the other stuff in that I normally talk about. What I will say is I'm giving this album an A because it is very much a punk album, in my opinion. Even if it does slow down at some points, I'm not going to give it an A plus. I might give it a lower grade, except for the fact that this is the first time that this kind of music reached a much more broader audience. The fact that they had a drummer kind of change things up and give it a more militaristic tone that kind of changed things that didn't sound just like the grandpa's guitars. It kind of gave it more of a it's okay to do this as a younger person and sing about this, and it kind of talked to a new generation about their identity. So it's getting a little bit of a legacy boost for me. That's why I'm giving it an A.
I'm going to come in slightly under Buzz. I agree with everything he said, except that it doesn't have the legacy boost for me because this is my first time hearing that, even though I heard some of these songs before. I will give it a bump for being innovative, even though I didn't realize that when the first time I listened to it because of the drum thing. I'll give it a B plus because at the end of the day, and not that it's easy to divorce the politics from it because they are so central to these songs, but these are all well-written songs, well-played songs, and what turned into a, I don't necessarily want to say fun, but high energy night at the pub.
Well, with that in mind, we have one more week of March left. Ben, what are we doing next week?
I don't know. I guess you'll just have to tune in and be surprised.
Oh, my fingers kind of hurt a little bit, man. You could almost say they're a little stiff.
Okay. Well, then let that be your hint.
Well, maybe that'll be.
Right.
With that said, you got any other argument? Oh, here we go. I know we already said it. Ben, would you buy this album?
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. If you have a chance to find it, buy it. If you're listening to this and you've stuck through it and you happen to have a copy, please, for the love of all that's holy, I want a copy too.
Indeed.
So, slunga foil, sekiar la, peace out.